Welcome to part two of our conversation about Ghosts of the American Revolution with Sam Beltrusis.
So there was a spirit. So I spent a lot of time at Concord's Colonial Inn, which is one of my favorite haunted hotels in New England. And I was communicating with a British soldier at the... So Northbridge is right a stone's throw from Concord's Colonial Inn. And during the American Revolution, it was used as a makeshift hospital for those that were wounded, not only the patriots from the Battle of Concord and Lexington, but also the British as well. So I was communicating with a wounded British soldier over and over again. He kept coming to me. It's room 24 where I had the initial communication with this British soldier. And then as I started communicating more and more with him, I kind of found out his whole backstory. And I even had an encounter at the North Bridge of like hearing footsteps, like running across the bridge, almost like a soldier. So it was an ongoing investigation and communication. And there was the whole idea. So there was a British soldier that was killed right during the Battle of Concord and Lexington by a gentleman named Ami White. And Ami White was sort of a local who was chopping wood right by where the Battle of Concord and Lexington broke out, right by the North Bridge. And the whole story was that he took his axe and he murdered two of the fallen British redcoats. So they were already like wounded, and he took the axe to kind of kill them. And you know, the British said that he killed them in cold blood and then scalped them, he did scalp them. But I was getting mixed messages from both Ami White and from the British soldier. You know, like my question was like, did you put him out of your, like, were you killing him just to kill him because he was the enemy, or were you killing him to put him out of his misery? And I kept getting that he was killed to be put out of his misery. And that was a huge controversy. The British, the British really used that as a propaganda, that the savages, the patriots were savages, and they would do things like scalping and Native American approaches to killing the British redcoats. So it's still an ongoing situation, but I do think that my Ami White is someone of interest from a spiritual perspective, and that whole mystery was around whether or not really happened that day when he killed the British soldier.
Yeah, I mean, especially just trying to set the record straight. Were there any other incidents or communications throughout your research on this where it was a moment like that where you wanted, where someone, rather, wanted to set the record straight and used you as the conduit for that message?
I had several locations, and I wrote a whole chapter about this, where the spirits really wanted to communicate. However, the property owners did not want to be in the book. And that's the hardest thing ever. So there's the Shirley Eustace house, and I was actually a tour guide there for several months. And it has history dating back to the American Revolution. And it was also a loyalist property as well. And I was communicating with the spirits of that house. And I don't even know if I could talk about it on the radio, but I will say that the lady of the house who was married to one of the physicians during the revolution, she really wanted to talk to me, but because of the restrictions from the property owners, they're like, we don't want to be in your book. Mm-hmm. We don't believe in ghosts. This is crazy. Don't even think about it. I basically talked, I wrote a whole chapter about like why do certain locations with ties to the revolution close their doors to the paranormal community. So there was a chapter on that I was trying to basically tell the story without telling the story. Mm-hmm. So there's some situations where the property owners are not on the same page with me, and that they don't want to be featured in the book. So I would say that those situations are the most difficult when it comes to the property owners not wanting me to communicate with them.
Is there ever a way around that for you, or simply, I mean, for example, on this show, if we're talking about a location or something and they don't want it to be known, we just omit the name of the place. It's like, well, we can talk about the experiences, but does that really kind of put a kink in it, especially when we're talking about something historic and historical figures?
Yeah, it really does. And I wish that when the spirits communicate with me that everybody is on the same page and they want that story to be conveyed. So I do find ways around it. I wrote a whole chapter on like, why do certain locations not want to be featured? They're trying to understand like where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of times it's, they want sort of like the whitewashed, history that we're taught in schools, and that's not the reality. I mean, mob violence started our country, and I'll tell you, I wrote this book right before the lockdown, and there was the whole past year political unrest was foreshadowed in my book. So history does repeat itself, and I was surprised how many things that came up this past year also came up during the beginnings of our country as well.
That had to be kind of scary to have just, you know, studied all of that and have written a book, and then you're starting to see history repeating itself. I mean, how did that kind of affect you, just kind of being in that mindset over the last year?
You know, like one of the first questions was like, what led you to write The Ghost of the American Revolution? I don't know. It was kind of like this weird, I'm like, I just need to write this book. And now I know why I was supposed to write this book. It was basically giving me a roadmap for the last year and a half on how to deal with the political unrest in our country, because it's happened before. Mm-hmm. And I really wish the book would have been able to come out before COVID or come out sooner, because I do think people would have been blown away by how the protest and the topics that I explore in the book were definitely major discussion points during the past year and a half. So it was shocking to me how prophetic the book was when I wrote the manuscript so long ago, and what folded since then.
Yeah. When you're in a situation and you're communicating with the other side, do you ever get messages or stories? I understand, of course, you would when it's nothing related to historic situations. But when we're talking specifically about this, the book, when you're doing research for it and historically documented stories of individuals, do you ever get messages from individuals that it's not historically documented anywhere? You can't go back and reference, the guy with the axe, you can't kind of understand that story, and you're, you know, hearing this other side do it, where it's just something no one's ever heard of, no one's ever known about, because it was never communicated. People who were involved in it died. Do you ever get stories like that that come through?
Absolutely. I mean, I just did a seance at the Oliver House, bringing that topic up as well. And there's so many spirits that want to talk. There was a woman who I channeled this past weekend at the seance for Brian Cano's History of the Paranormal exhibit. And the woman was ravaged by the Sons of Liberty. So the Sons of Liberty came in, they were looking for documents, and those documents, and this is what was coming through in my channeling session. And this woman, Sarah, who was Sally Hutchinson's servant, was guarding those documents with her dear life. So they take the woman, and this is not proven, it's not written in any history books, but this is what she told me. And they took her and basically dragged her down the stairs. She kept hitting her head on the stairs over and over again, because they wanted those documents. And then they basically raped her. It was horrible. And so that's not going to be in the history. So I get a lot of that, like a lot of the marginalized communities that were not in the history books telling me their stories.
When you have that, I mean, how does that affect you when you're hearing the story? Are you able to empathize, to sympathize, to show any emotion back? Can they feel any emotion back when you are hearing these stories from you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you would have seen the channeling session, it was in front of a bunch of people, mm-hmm. and they were all crying. It was emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I cry a lot of times. When I communicate with the spirits, I have been told by the spirits that they see me, my spirit, as female, like that I for whatever reason I attract women and children, and they feel comfortable with me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in tears, I'm bawling, I'm crying, sobbing along with them, and I take on their emotions. And I did for Sarah as well, the servant who was brutalized. I have no problems being in touch with, because it's not my emotions, it's their emotions.
Mm-hmm. But are you, because when you're channeling and you're getting those emotions, are you in touch with your own emotions at the same time? Or is it just completely like your part is just shut off and you're just basically being a vehicle for their emotions to come through? I'm just trying to understand the process.
Yeah, so I'm allowing my body, like I'm allowing myself to be a vessel for their story.
Okay.
So yeah, I do have physical manifestations during the channeling sessions that's theirs and not mine, but it hurts me too. Like, for example, when they were banging Sarah's head on the stairs and I was feeling it, I felt her head being banged and it felt my head hurt like so bad. Like I was getting like a migraine at the back of my head.
Yeah.
So I do have the physical aspects to what the story involves. And if it's violent, like if someone gets stabbed, there's like a phantom, like I feel like a phantom stabbing in my stomach. Mm-hmm. So I get the physical pain, but I've learned how to kind of keep it separate. It's not my story. It's not my pain. It's their pain. And so I do feel it, but maybe not on the level that they felt the pain as well.
Does the pain go away when the channeling session is ended or broken, or does it stay with you after?
It for the most part, the pain leaves pretty quickly. You can almost feel like it lifting from you when you close. However, like with a headache from the channeling session or the seance that I had with a woman whose head was bludgeoned or hit on the floor over and over again. That headache stayed with me for about an hour or so after. So there are paranormal after effects to the channeling sessions, but for the most part, I'm able to kind of shake it off, I guess. But I think the part that is very hard for me to shake off is the emotion. I mean, when you get so emotional during the channeling session, you're kind of like what just happened?
Sure.
And why am I able to go from, you know, like from like extreme crying and emotion to not being emotional very quickly when the spirit leaves you? So it's kind of like a shock to the system.
Yeah.
I had one channeling session where I cried so much in the channeling session that my eyes were swollen from the tear ducts, like being, you know, like they were just like my eyes were just like so swollen from the tears. I'm like, what's wrong with my eye? And it was because the tear duct was kind of like a tear overload, I guess, from the channeling session. So I do have physical after effects from these channeling sessions, but to me it's worth it getting their story and hopefully giving them some post-mortem peace.
Sure. Almost like an emotional hangover, I mean, if you will, where you know, say if you have a traumatic event that happens in life with not involving anything spiritual or supernatural, where it's you just go through something really traumatic, or you're thrown for a loop emotionally, and it just, you know, it tears you down, maybe just for a short period of time, but for days you still feel the effects of it because of the quick impact and trauma of whatever, you know, emotion or news that you processed. Would that be a good comparison for someone who doesn't have the ability that you do?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like getting back to the woman that I just channeled, it's been, I would say, several days of a paranormal hangover or paranormal day after, where I just felt so emotionally drained. Mm-hmm. And that's more the feeling that I get after these channeling sessions is the draining feeling, almost like you're sick or that you just need to rest a lot. And so I did feel drained, especially on Sunday, the day after the channeling session, but I did feel that for a couple of days after, because it was, I would say, probably one of my most intense spirit communication sessions where I felt her pain on a very, very deep level.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the most surprising things that you learned while channeling or doing research for this book?
I think the most surprising things had to do with like locations and uncovering the family secrets. What surprised me, and this is kind of the surprise of my whole life, is first of all, I'm tied to the Putnam family, who are the major accusers during the Salem witch trials, which I knew. But digging even deeper into my family lineage is that I'm also, in addition to the Putnams, I'm related to a lot of key figures in the American Revolution. So knowing that I'm related to Israel Putnam or Nathaniel Green was the biggest shock while doing research for this book.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Sam. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program today. His book, Ghosts of the American Revolution, to be released in November of 2021. You can get it wherever books are sold. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.